You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in the Southwest studios of WPR in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. Coming up in the second half of today's show, a conversation with UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao. But first, as you know by now, the state Supreme Court has overturned Wisconsin's stay-at-home order. Wednesday's 4-3 ruling said the administration of Governor Tony Evers exceeded its authority when State Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm issued the Safer at Home extension. The extension had been scheduled to run until Tuesday, May 26th. Instead, it's tossed out effective immediately. In an online media briefing following the ruling, La Crosse County Health Officer Jen Rombalski reacted.
This is really a time of great change. And while I think there may be mixed emotions in our residents and our businesses and our communities in La Crosse County and surrounding counties in relation to the Supreme Court decision, this is a time where we can unite together, and we need to remember that we are in a fight against a virus and not each other.
Rombalski says there's no longer an order in place that carries the force of law, but she says that doesn't change what needs to be done to keep our listening areas safe.
We know that we are not ready yet to be fully open. So despite whatever the order does or does not allow us to do or enforce us to do, we are not ready. And we know that because we see that in the data. So a complete return to functions prior to COVID-19 will definitely increase our cases and will very highly likely result in severe disease, including hospitalizations, and also very possibly deaths of our county residents. So I think it is important to know that what we do or do not do in terms of our own actions and behaviors will impact others.
One key to controlling the spread of COVID-19 is increased testing, says Rombalski. She says both Gunderson and Mayo Health Systems have significantly increased the number of tests they're able to process. In addition, Rombalski says the Wisconsin Army National Guard will hold a testing site in Onalaska next week.
We will have this testing site take place next Thursday, May 21st, from 11 to 7. And it will be held at the Omni Center in Onalaska. And I think that will be an important first step to continuing to increase the number of testing. So again, we have had healthcare capacity increasing. We bring in a National Guard testing site to increase. Please recognize that already this week, we've had 7 new cases and we haven't yet had this testing site. And that testing site, we anticipate, will bring in additional positive cases. Our primary goal in that testing site is to test anyone with symptoms. So I think what's important to note is that many individuals that we've talked to who have been diagnosed with COVID-19, their symptoms have started out very mild, to include, I thought I just had allergies. It felt just like a minor congestion. So it is very minor, and we need to be quickly catching that in ourselves because we may not know that we have COVID-19. I think that's concerning to me, and I think it should be concerning to all of us.
Rombalski reiterated, in spite of the Supreme Court's ruling, Southwestern Wisconsin is not ready to return to business as usual.
Really, I want to stress that this is a time of unity. So we are not under an order at the present time. That does not mean that we do nothing different. That doesn't mean that we go back to pre-COVID-19 days, that we just stop doing all of the behaviors that we already have been doing. We know that over 70% of our communities and individuals in our communities across this state supported the Safer at Home order, whether you did or didn't. I think the behavior changes that we ask you to make here are so critical, because what you do or don't do will impact lives.
She says it's important for people to remember how easily COVID-19 can spread from one person to another, or even to many people.
As I have said before, it is important to understand how this virus spreads. COVID-19 is a virus that spreads through droplets. So these are droplets that come out of your airway through your mouth and nose as you talk, breathe, sing, cough, other things like that. And we can, whether we know it or not, we can infect others if we are infected, and we may not have symptoms. This virus is not political. It does not care who it infects, and we really must use the tools that we have available to us to minimize the spread of this virus and the disease and destruction and death that it can cause in our county residents.
Rombalski says her counterparts in neighboring counties are in regular communication, sharing information back and forth.
We are very connected in the counties surrounding us. I have both been already this morning in conversation with our State Association of Health Officers, which included health officers from across the state in that call this morning. I also met with all of the counties around us, Buffalo, Trempealeau, Jackson, Monroe, Vernon, and Crawford counties in Wisconsin. And we all have individual county systems that we need to go through in order to determine the best course of action. I have absolutely shared my statement with them. I have allowed them to consider any or all of it that may be beneficial for their own counties. They are all currently working to figure out the best action for their counties. And I know that this is something that many counties, probably all health officers across the state, are looking at the Supreme Court decision, deciding what action is best for their county, and then developing a plan to move forward.
Jen Rombalski is the health officer for La Crosse County. She spoke at an online media briefing Thursday. We're joined now by La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot on Newsmakers. Mayor Cabot, thank you very much for joining us today.
You bet. My pleasure.
So a lot has happened this week related to COVID-19 in La Crosse and across the state. The most obvious example is the Supreme Court ruling throwing out the Safer at Home order, which basically, as we've heard from the health department earlier, means that there is no specific order with the force of law in place, but a lot of officials are recommending the same kind of precautions that we've all been taking for many weeks now. What's your reaction to that ruling, and what have you seen in response to it in La Crosse?
Well, I'm not surprised that by the Supreme Court's ruling. I'm disappointed, but it's unfortunate that a public health crisis that we're facing has become this political issue. But nevertheless, we're going to do everything we can locally to help keep our people safe and to try to decrease the spread of the coronavirus here in La Crosse without any order and having the state order being struck down. It then is left to local officials to decide whether or not to extend orders. And unfortunately, I think the county has decided not to extend the order, but to basically have no order in place whatsoever. So we've, you know, really in the flip of a switch from last night, we've gone from the Safer at Home order to absolutely no restrictions whatsoever.
The county has authority, if they choose, to establish some kind of order. Could the city do that on its own, or is that strictly a county issue?
We do not have the ability, or at least my understanding in consultation with our legal department, we do not have the authority. We do not speak for the La Crosse County Health Department. We do not manage or oversee them. We are part, along with the rest of the county communities, we are part of La Crosse County Health Department. So in the case of a public health crisis, we follow the county's lead on those types of decisions. So even if I believe strongly that there should still be an order in place here in La Crosse, I do not have the ability to do that. I will say that I did, you know, anticipating the Supreme Court's ruling, I did ask the county health officials last week and again last night for them to strongly consider keeping some sort of an order in place. It could be obviously modified, or you know, the time frame could be shorter than May 26th. But my concern is just the confusion from going from an order to absolutely no restrictions. And I'm hearing about that already this morning from citizens and businesses wanting to know what the guidelines are and how they'll be enforced. So I'm disappointed that there are no orders in place, but that's the world we're living in. And so we're going to do everything we can with our city operations and in our community to try to keep people safe.
We've seen a pretty widespread difference in the reactions of businesses, especially bars and restaurants, in relation to this. Within a couple of hours of the order being overturned by the state Supreme Court, you saw bars and restaurants in the state, some of them opening and with lots of people pouring in, according to video and photos posted on social media, including a few establishments in La Crosse that I'm familiar with. On the other hand, yes, you've seen a lot of places that are saying, in spite of the order, we're still lack of an enforceable order, we're still concerned about the health and safety of our customers, staff, what have you, and so we're still maintaining curbside service and those kinds of things. What kind of process would you like to see in place? What kind of benchmarks would you like to see in place before restaurants and bars and other kinds of establishments just sort of fling wide the doors?
Well, I would be hopeful that there would be the health guidelines that would help to determine those next steps, and both the county health department has put out those guidelines, as well as the state with the bounce back plan and identifying the key metrics that need to be met in order to start to reopen. And you've even, we witnessed that earlier in the week. There was some opening up of retail stores. Having those health, because this is a public health crisis, having the health guidelines in place and following those to take then that next step for reopening, I think makes the most sense, and following the advice of those medical professionals. But unfortunately, without any rule or any order that would establish that, it is in essence up to every individual business. And I think, again, our people here have been doing a great job as a community in following the safer at home, and that's why our numbers are so low. But I myself witnessed several of those bars last night that they were open, and I didn't go in, but I saw them from the outside. They were open. I didn't see any social distancing or masks, and that has me greatly concerned.
We're speaking with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot today on Newsmakers, and we'll continue our conversation and have much more with the mayor after a quick timeout. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like much more in-depth coverage of COVID-19 and Wisconsin's response to it, our news team has been busy, our digital team has been busy, and you can find all of their stories and much more on our website, WPR.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios, speaking today with Mayor Tim Cabot of La Crosse about COVID-19, its impact in the community. We've heard the mayor's reaction to the state Supreme Court tossing out the safer at home order that was supposed to have been extended until nearly the end of this month. Now we're turning our focus on the fiscal state of things in La Crosse and COVID-19 casting a long shadow in terms of city budgets all across the country, and La Crosse is no exception. Mr. Mayor, talk about how your city is faring financially in light of COVID-19.
Well, up to that, of course, we were very strong. The projections that we're estimating here for the rest of this year, we're going to have about a $6 million hole in our $68 million budget. The primary cause of that is the loss of revenues, including, if you can think of like the La Crosse Center and booking events, you think of kind of just the normal licenses and fees and those types of things. We do have a little bit of an additional expense because of the virus and what we needed to do for preparations for the April 7th election and a few other needs for equipment and protective gear and that. But for the most part, that $6 million loss is because of revenues going away. And so we're I mean, it's going to be a challenge. You know, the vast majority of any local government's budget is personnel and it's people to provide those critical services. We're in the midst right now of going department by department to identify where we can make changes, realize savings, and look at a way to plug that gap.
During the recent couple of months where a lot of people across the country and across the state have been working from home, city offices have not been offering the full slate of services that they normally have. Were you able to keep all of those staff employed during that time? Was there enough work for them to do?
Yes, at least at this point, we implemented measures of working from home or working remotely, of going to split shifts so that we could keep our staff somewhat separated from each other. The police department went to an emergency shift, 12-hour shifts. The fire department located in a couple of additional locations at La Crosse Center and at Central High School to try to spread out the personnel. So we did take those precautions while people still provided those services. Many of the folks in the office, you know, worked remotely to do those things. So that has been, I think, successful because we've been able to, you know, keep people from being exposed or passing along the virus. And we're going to continue that for the foreseeable future. Our facilities will still be closed to in-person services through May 26th. We are keeping everybody busy at this point, but with this budget deficit, you know, we're going to be looking at changes to staff. There's just no other way around it.
So have you seen some of the proposals yet that you said you asked department heads to come up with ideas for savings? Have you begun to brainstorm with them what some of these savings might be found?
Yeah, we have. We have had the start of those conversations. Really, you know, if you think about personnel, it's things like hiring freezes and furloughs and with going or not doing pay increases, looking for people who may be doing early retirement, where there are vacant positions, not filling those. I mean, so those are kind of your usual. It's not like it's, you know, rocket science. It's pretty standard municipal budgeting, but we're looking at those. And then we're also seeing if there's perhaps some one-time fixes that we could do, whether it would be selling some city property or some of our redevelopment and economic development projects, if we were able to move those ahead more quickly and realize some income from those.
I'm looking at some of the events that have been canceled. A lot of different organizations early on had to cancel whole seasons full of concerts and every type of activity in the La Crosse area. Big summer festivals have been canceled across the area, including Riverfest here in La Crosse. Oktoberfest, given this week's ruling, it seems like that might be on pace to still be taking place. Have you heard of any changes in plans due to the ruling in terms of the cancellation of Riverfest, or have you heard anything about whether Oktoberfest might still be taking place?
Well, I do believe that Riverfest has been canceled. I have not yet heard from Oktoberfest. We are looking to meet with their leadership here in the next month or so to understand where they're at and their plans and preparations. For the most part, we're going to be relying on the county health department and the standards that they will be able to offer to keep people safe, to do the social distancing and the good hygiene and wearing masks and all of that. And if those types of things can be accomplished, then we'll see where we're at when it's that time of the year for those types of events and festivals. But as far as I know, the Oktoberfest people are still planning, and we'll see as we get, you know, a little bit further along here in the next month or so.
What would be the impact financially on the city, canceling big events like that that bring a lot of people in from out of town who ostensibly spend a lot of money in La Crosse area hotels, restaurants, in addition to just at the festival themselves?
Sure. It's a very significant economic impact. We're seeing that already with the loss of like room tax dollars, for example, for the city. I know sales tax revenues are down, and I'm imagining that that's going to be the, you know, kind of the standard discussion throughout not only the rest of this year, but then as we start to look at the budgets for 2021 and the state's reliance heavily on sales and income taxes and just what that's going to mean then for their budget and shared revenue and state aids that they then pass along to the locals. So it's a very dire economic situation, and it's not, as far as those festivals impacts, those are very huge for our community. I mean, I think everybody wants to see things move forward and reopen and get back to that type of just fellowship you know, it's what makes our communities great. The challenge we have, of course, is with the virus that's still in our community, and the steps that we've taken up to this point have been positive because we've seen low case numbers. If we see an uptick in case numbers and surges towards our healthcare facilities, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be very bad. So, you know, so the festivals have a huge impact, and like I said, we'll see what the plans are with Oktoberfest here probably in the next month or so.
With no official order in place from the government, that leaves business owners in the tough spot of making individual decisions about whether to open or whether to expand the services that they're offering. What word would you have for business owners as they make those decisions about how widely to expand the services that they're currently offering and how quickly to reopen their doors or to reopen portions of their business that might have been a reduced service?
Well, you are correct. They are going to have to make their individual decisions based on what's best for them. There are a number of guidelines that have been put out and recommendations, whether it's from the County Health Department or the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, as far as maybe not necessarily just directly to businesses, but looking more community-wide. I've been telling everybody to err on the side of caution and to go incrementally, so that we can address if we do have a spike in cases. I think one of the big challenges that we're still experiencing is the lack of testing. We are still not at our capacity here in La Crosse County for the adequate amount of tests to give us that type of information. But I would encourage businesses to follow the health indicators and the guidelines from the health department and from the state economic development folks as far as answering those questions.
La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot today on Newsmakers. Mayor Cabot, thank you very much for giving us some time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Coming up in moments, a conversation with UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao. Remember, you can find more information about our program on our website. You can stream on demand previous episodes at WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also subscribe to our show in your favorite podcast app. Just open the app, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. We surely would appreciate it. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse, specifically on the campus of the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, where I'm joined via telephone by our Chancellor Joe Gao, who's been kind enough to join me today to talk about how the university has faced the difficulties presented by the coronavirus here in the La Crosse area, throughout the Cooley region and the Driftless area. Chancellor Gao, thank you very much for giving us some time today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Ezra. Thank you for inviting.
Absolutely. Well, you've faced, no doubt, a number of challenges over your career as an administrator, but this must be high up on the list. Half a semester suddenly done entirely online. What's your reaction to how your institution has faced the difficulties presented by COVID-19?
I think our people have really come through in a challenging time. And by that, I mean the faculty, the staff, the students, the administrators on the leadership team. You know, everybody pitched in and said, we need to make a very rapid transition to a different format so that we can finish out the semester and make sure students who are scheduled to graduate can finish on time and the other students can maintain their progress. And, you know, we did that, and I'm just so proud of our people, because it is, as you say, an extraordinary moment. I've been fortunate to be in administration for 30 years and have never seen anything like this. And I think other people would say the same. This is unprecedented.
All of the students and faculty that suddenly converted to online, students who maybe hadn't even taken an online class before, faculty who had to adjust course curriculum to be in that new space. What have you heard from them in their response to how this was all handled or what that experience was like for them?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have data, and we know that actually 75% of UWL students have taken at least one online course prior to this. So I think for the students, it wasn't as new as it was for some of the faculty and staff who have never taught or worked in a distance format. So that was where, you know, things had to get done very rapidly, and our folks came through. And now we are this summer encouraging all our faculty to take training in distance education that we're going to make available so that if we do find ourselves in this situation again in the future, it won't be such an abrupt transition.
This is finals week at UW-La Crosse. Any indication yet to, I mean, I know you don't have final grades or anything like that, but any indication yet to know how students have fared academically through all the difficulty?
Well, as you can appreciate, you know, there will be some students who are not happy with the need to make the shift, but I think they understood we didn't really have any other option. But really what I'm hearing is not any unusual concern about it. And it seems like everybody was able to handle that transition and will finish. And, the grades, as you say, they're not tallied yet, but, we'll know more in a few weeks.
There was an opportunity, I think, to tell me if I understand this correctly, that students, if they felt that it was necessary, could under certain circumstances, opt in to receiving a pass-fail grade rather than a letter grade. How would something like that work?
Yes, and we wanted to be very careful with that because some universities immediately said, well, all the grades now are pass-fail. And that is problematic in the future because some students will need actual grades, you know, to get admitted to law school, med school, graduate school. Employers might want them, you know. So we're very careful to say, let's take a moment and talk about, you know, what is the issue that we're trying to address. And so our faculty came up with a very good system where students will get their grades, and if they feel that there's some extenuating circumstance that they want to petition, they can have grades of D or below converted to unsatisfactory and grades of C or above converted to satisfactory. And then those will be the designations, and it won't affect the grade point average. We're hoping that that is something that's not utilized by very many students because, you know, really it's in their best interest to have actual letter grades for their future work.
Now, what does it look like for the summer? Well, obviously people won't be returning to campus right away, but is summer school online same way as this semester was, or has there been a reduction in what's going to be offered over the summer?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That was something I was curious about and asked last summer, how many of the courses were online? And about 75% of them were anyway last summer. So we have not seen a dramatic change in online enrollment. And the numbers that we got today, 99% of last year's enrollment is there this year. Now, that said, there are three periods of summer school, and the third one, which I don't have the exact date in front of me, but mid-late July, that's the one where we're saying we're not sure yet whether we can have any classes face-to-face at that point. So those first two summer sessions are all online, and the enrollment is strong. So we hope that'll hold up, and we would be, you know, really thrilled to be able to have some face-to-face classes in that third session. It's just too soon to know whether we're going to have the ability to do that.
It is. And this is, you know, maybe not a fair question because it's asking you to even further speculate down the road. But is there anything to indicate that classes won't resume as normal on campus next fall?
Well, you know, there are some varying opinions on that. And you see universities around the country, most of them are saying we're planning for face-to-face, but we're going to make, you know, other plan B as well to have some distance courses. I think it'll probably come out to be a blend of small face-to-face classes and larger online classes. And I say that because surveys show that students really do want a face-to-face component. It's just, of course, it's got to be safe. And that's the hard part right now, to say, well, what will the standards look like in August and September? Now, another component to this that is unknown at this point is, what does the situation look like in the residence halls? And at UWL, we have a overall enrollment of about 10,500 students, and 3,300 of those live in the residence halls typically. Are we going to be able to have that large a population in residence halls? The big question, and no one has an answer yet nationally, can you have roommates, or do you just need to have one person per room? That would have tremendous implications for us if we can only have one person in a room financially. You know that, and then also, where do those students who can't be in the room go to live? That's another big unknown question.
I would imagine a lot of residents in the adjoining neighborhoods would be wondering the answer to that question as well. Is the student housing, off-campus student housing, is far more prominent than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Yes, and you know, that gets us onto an interesting issue as well. We can regulate the social distancing of students on campus. It's okay, only one to a room, and you know, we're going to have classes where you're sitting 6 feet away from the other student, for example. But off campus, it's not possible to do that. So there probably will be an increase in students living off campus, and we'll have to encourage them to, you know, maintain safe behaviors and hope that they follow through on that.
I'm wondering how does that factor into decisions that are made about things like athletics, things like theatrical performances? You know, our community loves to support its university, well, all of its colleges, but especially activities here at UWL. So what does that kind of look like? Decisions about, you know, whether the football team gets to have an audience, whether, you know, looking ahead to, you know, what kind of crowds are allowed to watch gymnastics or basketball or any presentations by the music or theater departments?
So it's a very good question. And at this point, we don't have the answer to that. And certainly we'll want to take our guidance from the state and federal level, and what are the best practices, you know, in the fall. I can tell you, I don't envy my outstanding counterpart at Madison, Chancellor Rebecca Blank. That must be very daunting in terms of, you know, those major Division I programs, what will happen there, and the financial implications of that are pretty significant.
On a campus like UW La Crosse, where you're part of the NCAA, but you know, one of the lower tiers, Division III, those sports are for the most part not revenue generating, right?
That's correct, and it's really the student athlete ideal, where our students play their sports for the love of the game, to use the phrase, and it's a really wonderful thing to see, and I hope they can keep doing that. You know, one of our premier sports is track and field, and one would hope that, you know, given the individualized nature of many of the things in track and field, that those could still occur. you know, but again, we'll have to see what the situation looks like once we start the school year.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're speaking today with Chancellor Joe Gow from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, talking about that institution's reaction to COVID-19 and the impact now and the potential impact in the future. And it's that future impact that we're going to be talking about after we return from this time out. We'll get into a little bit of how the fiscal changes created by COVID-19 are affecting the university. That's coming up. If you'd like to learn more about our program, you can find information, you can find past episodes, or you can submit ideas for future programs on our website. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall here in La Crosse, and delighted to be joined today by Chancellor Joe Gow from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. We've been talking about UWL's reaction to COVID-19, how it's affected students and faculty, and what it's been like moving about half a semester's worth of activities entirely online and how the students and faculty have handled that. COVID-19 presents no shortage of fiscal challenges as well, and that's what we're dealing with in this segment. Chancellor Gow, let's start by talking about what areas of the budget at UWL have been hardest hit financially by COVID-19?
Well, the big one for us has been refunding housing, dining, and parking and other fees. And we did do that, and that created about a $4 to $5 million challenge for us. So we had to address that. And thankfully, we did get some assistance from the federal government through the CARES Act. We also have frozen our hiring, frozen our purchasing, frozen any travel. So we've been able to meet that need. And then the other thing that has occurred is the state had a budget lapse, which means we needed to give money back, 5% of the operations to the state. And so that was several more million dollars, and we are working on ways to address that. Thankfully, our campus, we did not need to do what are called furlough days for the entire workforce, which would be essentially people not working on certain days, and then that's really a pay reduction, of course. Regrettably, there were some individuals who their work was so contingent on in-person work with students that we did have to place them on furloughs for specific periods in the hopes that the students are back in the fall and then we can have full employment.
And that's like you said, though, less created by the fiscal situation and more so by the absence of students, the employees that did end up being furloughed.
Yes, we were very fortunate that we had record enrollments and our finances have been very well managed by our outstanding Vice Chancellor for Administration and Finance, Bob Hetzel, over the years. And so we were in a relatively solid position prior to the COVID experience. And now we've been able to meet the financial challenges associated with the current situation. The one that then confronts us is what happens in the future. How many students do we have back in the fall? How many of them live on campus? Those kinds of considerations. And then even further down the road will be what does the state's budget picture look like in the next biennium, where one could anticipate, a pretty austere budget because the tax revenues are down significantly with the high unemployment associated with this crisis.
So what are you doing in the short term? What have you had to do to plug the holes where there are holes in the budget?
Well, as I say, we're very careful about not filling vacancies unless they're absolutely essential. And that's a very key tool that, we've worked with over the years. I think it's much better to leave a position unfilled than to have to say to somebody who is in a position and working hard to say you don't have a job anymore. So we're not filling the vacancies. Obviously, we're not traveling hardly at all. And moving forward, that will be curtailed pretty significantly. And then our purchasing, what we're spending money on, we want to look at cutting that back. So there are tools that we have that we think, if the enrollment holds up, we should be able to cope with this. Our concern is that there would be a sudden drop in enrollment, that students would say, well, I don't feel safe going to campus. I don't want to take classes at a distance, so I'm going to just sit it out for a year. That would be very challenging if we saw that phenomenon. And we hope, we work very hard to create a good experience for students and to have a strong bond. And, our faculty and staff really do reach out to them. So hopefully that's continuing through this tough period, and they'll stay with us, and we'll come out of it all together.
There are some projects on campus, some buildings that are being renovated or planning to be renovated. There are some things. I'm thinking of the new field house project that would be a building built from scratch. Some of those projects have been delayed or shelved. What can you tell us about what decisions have been made in those areas?
The Wittig project is on schedule, and that will get done because that was really well along before this happened, and we had the funds set aside to pay for it. So that 1916 building, it was the second oldest gymnasium in the state of Wisconsin, will now be the home for our College of Business Administration. So that's really exciting to have that happening. And, we want to open that in the fall. So hopefully we'll be able to be back to do that. And you mentioned the field house. That will proceed on schedule with groundbreaking in September or August even. And there too, the state has already given us the permission to do that. And we've collected some fees, and we have a structure that will make that possible. The project that most concerns us is the phase two of our Prairie Springs Science Center. And that was on the UW system list as a high priority. And then it moved down a little bit and didn't make the current budget. But we certainly are hoping to have that in the 21-23 budget. And, that's something that I think the state realizes. I mean, now more than ever, science is vital to our future. I mean, that's how we're going to solve the COVID issue. So we need a great science facility. And it's also something I think that will be viewed as a good economic stimulus project because, a project like that, there are lots of jobs that it creates for our local economy. So we're very, feel pretty good about that one, even though money is tight right now.
Have you had to talk to anybody about changes in academic offerings or anything like that in light of all this?
Not really. I mean, it was so sudden. And, everybody said, okay, we'll make the transition. I mean, everything is still pretty much in place, and our offerings are solid, and they draw students. And, we're always looking at are there other areas we can get into that students are wanting as far as their career plans. And, we have some very traditional programs and then also, very cutting edge modern ones. And that's as it should be.
Now, as you're looking ahead to either next year's students who are graduating from high school, gosh, this week, next week, in the coming couple of weeks, they're finishing up high school. They're getting ready to come. Maybe some students who are not yet ready to come, but they've got another year of high school left. What's the message to students and the families of those students who are a little bit wary of what college might look like in a year or 2 years?
Yes, this must be a very unusual time for high school students. I can't really, begin to imagine, all the normal things that people are doing disrupted in the way they have been. What I can say to those students is here at UW-La Crosse, we're working very, very hard to maintain that great student-centered academic and extracurricular experience that we are known for. And, you know, we will keep it highly personalized and focused on students and their success. You know, that might involve some distance technology, but we're pretty good at that. And also the face-to-face piece will always be there. It's fascinating for me to walk the campus now and to think that the school's been here for 111 years and it will carry on. It's just this phase that we're in right now. We can't have many people on campus, and that's highly unusual.
As you look forward to next year in closing, or next year, or maybe even, like you said, that third section of the summer period, when you are able to have some students back on campus, when you're able to have, under some circumstances, in-person teaching and learning going on, as we're closing, tell me what that looks like for you, and what your hope for the next phase of education at UWL is.
Well, one of the great joys of my job is I can visit any class or any meeting or group, and they'll say, "Oh, it's the chancellor," and it's just really a wonderful thing. And I guess, you know, right now the thing I miss the most is we can't do an in-person commencement, and I always say that's my favorite day of the year because I get to shake each hand of every graduate. And I miss that a lot and hope that we can get back to the way things were before, where, you know, we don't have to maintain distance and we can have people in groups, because that's really the essence of the academic experience. And, you know, this whole situation has reminded us of how good we are at bringing people together and, you know, interacting, and out of that coming new ideas and knowledge. And, you know, it's vitally important for the future of our society. And I know we'll get back there. It's just a question of the timing and the incremental steps that we're going to need to make along the way.
You brought to my attention something that I didn't even ask you about, and that is commencement. Should have happened in just a matter of days, really. What happens to commencement now?
Well, we are planning something for late August. We'll see whether or not we can do that. If not, then at some future point, we do want to give these class of 2020 graduates the opportunity to have their moment on the stage and to get their degree formally. The next best thing we can do right now, Saturday morning, we will launch on our website something that the students are calling Couch Commencement, and that will be a virtual experience. And I recorded a message and a little music there, and other people have as well. And then the students are going to post photos and reminiscences about their time at UWL. So I'm going to certainly make sure to check all that out, and would encourage others to do so too, because these are, you know, very special graduates this time around. I say they made history, and that's no exaggeration.
Chancellor Joe Gao of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse has joined us for this portion of our show today. Chancellor, thank you very much for your time, and good luck with everything at UWL coming up in the future.
Oh, thank you, Ezra, and we're just very grateful for the coverage you're providing and the ability to bring people together around stories like this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Since we had a chance to catch up with Chancellor Joe Gao, the state Supreme Court has obviously ruled to end the Safer at Home extension, which had been in place. So UW-La Crosse has said that it's going to be status quo through May 31st, and then beginning on June 1st, some non-essential staff will have the ability to seek permission to get back on campus. And then at a date still to be determined, the rest of the non-essential staff will be able to return to the university. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall from our Southwestern studios. Thank you for joining us today. If you would like more information on our program, if you'd like to suggest a topic for a future show or ask a question that you think we should be looking for an answer to, you can visit our website. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to subscribe to the show, you can open any podcasting app, essentially, and search for Newsmakers and hit the subscribe button. We certainly would appreciate you doing that. For our producer, John Davis, I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.